WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Next Monday, the UN will begin a three-day special session on HIV/AIDS. An estimated 16,000 people around the world become infected with HIV each day. There have been some medical breakthroughs, like the new antiretroviral drugs that are helping extend the lives of many people with HIV, but we still don't have an AIDS vaccine. My guest John Cohen is a journalist who's been covering the search for an AIDS vaccine since 1989. His new book, Shots in the Dark, describes the mix of scientific, business, political, and ethical forces that have made finding an AIDS vaccine so difficult. Cohen writes about science and medicine for Science Magazine. He says the first big breakthrough in the search for an AIDS vaccine came in 1984 when the HIV virus was identified. There have also been breakthroughs in our understanding of the immune system. When most people think of immunity, they think of antibodies, but that's just one small part of the picture.
The most important thing that has reshaped the AIDS vaccine search is the ability to find killer cells. Antibodies very simply stop things from getting inside of cells. What happens once a cell gets infected? There's a whole other arm of the immune system that relies on these green berets, essentially, that can find the enemy and eliminate it. And those are killer cells. Well, 20 years ago, nobody could find killer cells. Now there are very sensitive techniques to finding those in people, and those have made a huge difference in the search for an AIDS vaccine.
There was a study called the Nairobi Prostitute Study that tried to analyze prostitutes who seem to have an immunity to AIDS, who were exposed to the virus but seem to have an innate immunity to it. Can you tell us a little about what's been learned in that study?
Yeah, it's still ongoing, and what the researchers have found is that there are women who repeatedly have had unprotected sex who do not become infected over years of being in the business. I met with some of the women in Nairobi. I went to their homes. I went to brothels. And it's clear that they're terrifically poor. They live sometimes in mud huts, and they have sex for about a dollar, five, 10 times a day even. And they receive education from the researchers about condoms and also about female condoms. I went to a brothel where they received a lesson about the female condom. Yet some of these women don't use protection and do not, upon repeated exposure to HIV, become infected. Studies of their blood have shown that they do recognize the virus. In other words, they've seen it and they've mounted an immune response to it. And it ultimately leads back to killer cells. And people are trying to design vaccines that exploit that. That group in Kenya is but one group of what are called exposed uninfected people around the world. And there are several groups of exposed uninfected people who've never been studied. I mean, they're hard to identify. You're kind of looking for something that you can't see.
So is the theory that this has to do with those killer cells, those green berets that attack the virus once it's entered the cell?
Yeah, and the theory is that they, through whatever mechanism, learned how to beat the virus at its own game. And there have been a few sobering things that have happened over the past couple of years. A few of these women who were thought to be protected became infected. So it's not a guarantee. But then think about the vaccines in us. The vaccines we have, they don't guarantee we're not going to get the diseases. What they do is they increase our odds that we're not going to get a disease. That's all vaccines do. Many of them increase our odds tremendously, but that's all they do. These women have much better odds of not becoming infected. And I still think there's a lot of mystery as to why that is. And I think there's a lot of opportunity to find more people like this and tease out more of the mechanisms that lead to their resistance.
And what are some of the other scientific routes being explored in AIDS vaccines?
There are basically two schools of thought. One school of thought says, understand the mechanism to the finest detail and then try and build a vaccine that makes the immune system do what you want. Another school of thought is much more trial and error. It's empirical. It says, let's test vaccines in monkeys, see what works, and then move those forward. So both of those approaches are happening right now. The more mechanistic approach uses lots and lots of fancy tools and techniques to make things happen that may or may not work ultimately, but they're pretty swift looking and they sell pretty well on Wall Street if you have a biotech company. I don't mean to be too cynical, but I think that there's truth in that.
Yeah, I'm surprised that there's still vaccines that are working with monkeys, because I thought that HIV affects monkeys differently than it does human beings.
Yeah, it's a good point. HIV itself does not infect monkeys, but there's a monkey cousin of HIV called SIV, the simian immunodeficiency virus. And when that is put into Asian monkeys, it causes AIDS in the monkeys. And there's another virus that's been made in the laboratory that combines SIV and HIV. It's called SHIV, S-H-I-V. It also causes disease in monkeys. So what researchers do is they make vaccines from SIV or S-H-I-V, and then they give those to monkeys, and then they put the virus into them to see whether the monkeys can either completely defeat that infection or become infected and slow the progression of disease or not become sick. And that's the main way that AIDS vaccines are tested today.
What are some of the scientific reasons why an AIDS vaccine is so much more difficult to find than, say, the polio or the smallpox vaccine was?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, because I think a lot of people skip right over that central question. With polio, antibodies clearly protect people from poliovirus. With HIV, no one knows what clearly protects people. There are clues. Maybe it's antibodies. Maybe it's killer cells. Maybe it's a combination of antibodies and killer cells. Maybe it's something else entirely different. Another thing that distinguishes the search for an AIDS vaccine from the search for the smallpox vaccine, which is a great example, is I think sometimes scientists can become bamboozled and confused by all that they can know, rather than what they need to know. Edward Jenner, who made the smallpox vaccine, noticed that, or knew the folklore that dairy maids who got cowpox didn't get smallpox. He took cowpox from a dairy maid, put it into a little boy, then put smallpox into the little boy. Now, that's completely unethical. You couldn't do that today. But that's how the smallpox vaccine was discovered. Edward Jenner didn't know that viruses existed, let alone an immune system. It was completely trial and error.
Since HIV attacks the immune system, is the typical immune response from a vaccine not something that you can work with for an HIV vaccine?
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, HIV, I describe it as the arsonist that attacks the firehouse. Because it has evolved to duck and dodge the immune system, it does make it trickier to make a vaccine. It doesn't mean it can't be done, but it's certainly not as straightforward as a virus that doesn't attack the immune system.
Let's look a little bit at the funding issues. Have the pharmaceutical companies invested as much in experiments to find an AIDS vaccine as they have in experiments to find drugs that fight AIDS?
No, I think that's a central problem to the AIDS vaccine enterprise. If you look at anti-HIV drugs, there are 14 different drugs on the market made by 10 big pharmaceutical companies. There are only four big pharmaceutical companies that even make vaccines. And I would argue that only one of them has a serious AIDS vaccine program, and that's a recent development. So Big Pharma has, by and large, shied away from the AIDS vaccine field. There's a pretty simple calculus to figure out why they haven't run into it. Partly it is the science. Certainly it's difficult. But the other part is the entire vaccine marketplace for all vaccines that are now sold in 1999 is estimated to have been $4 billion. A best-selling drug that year could have brought in $5 billion, one drug.
So who is funding AIDS vaccine research now?
In the mid-1990s, several institutions and organizations and researchers recognized that there was a market failure. One thing that happened was researchers banded together and formed the International AIDS Vaccine Initiative, which is a nonprofit based in New York that merges biotech companies with researchers from both poor and wealthy countries to make vaccines, AIDS vaccines, for poor countries. The National Institutes of Health in the U.S. is the single largest funder of AIDS vaccine research. It spends more than the entire world combined. You can't underestimate what it does. It revamped itself in the mid-1990s to become more like industry in many ways, to move vaccines out of laboratories and into people. European Union has gotten together and formed Eurovac, another consortium of researchers. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has funded the International AIDS Vaccine Initiative to the tune of $126 million. I think that's more than all of Europe has spent to date on AIDS vaccine research. There's a lot of good stuff happening right now. I don't think it's enough, but certainly things are turning around for the better.
My guest is journalist John Cohn. His new book is called Shots in the Dark, The Wayward Search for an AIDS Vaccine. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. John Cohn is my guest. He writes for Science Magazine, and he's the author of the new book, Shots in the Dark, The Wayward Search for an AIDS Vaccine. What are some of the ethical problems that scientists are running into now who are trying to come up with an AIDS vaccine and need to find people to test it on?
Well, the ethical precepts should be the same all around the world. The reality is that there are different standards in different places. I'll give you a strong example. In the United States and Europe right now, when there are HIV vaccine tests, if you get infected during the trial, not from the vaccine, but you get infected, the vaccine didn't work, let's say, or let's say you got the placebo, the dummy shot, you get infected, the odds are that you're going to be able to get drugs to treat your HIV infection. What happens in Africa when you're in an HIV vaccine trial and you become infected? It's not the fault of the vaccine, but you become infected. Well, are you going to be able to get drugs? Probably not. And that fact makes it much simpler to analyze whether a vaccine works or not. In other words, if you're in the United States, Europe, Australia, you're in a vaccine trial, you get infected, you start taking drugs, how can the researchers tell whether the vaccine is keeping you healthy or the drugs are keeping you healthy? It becomes a muddy picture. Well, in Africa, it's pretty clear cut. You got infected, then I can just look at you and I can look at the people who got the dummy shot and decide whether it helped you at all. So that creates a huge ethical problem. And people are really struggling with that right now.
So the question is, should the people who are participating in vaccine trials in developing countries have the right to AIDS drugs if they do contact AIDS?
Right, but then
even though other people around them probably aren't getting those AIDS drugs.
That's right. And that raises another thorny ethical issue, which is it undue influence to encourage them to join a trial, to volunteer, if they know that they're going to get drugs, if they become infected? Now think about it. If you live in South Africa, where 20% of the adults are infected, well, that's pretty attractive. If I get infected, which I've got a 1 in 5 chance of it happening anyway, I'm going to get drugs if I join this trial. Well, that violates ethical principles.
So what are the countries in which vaccine trials are currently underway?
There have been about 50 HIV vaccine trials that have started around the world, and it's a 3-phase process. Only one vaccine has moved all the way to the final stage of testing. That's being tested in the United States, Canada, Europe, and Thailand.
And is this a promising trial?
Most researchers have no hope whatsoever that it will work. There is a small group of researchers who believe in it, but the U.S. National Institutes of Health decided in 1994 that the results were so mediocre from early trials in humans to not even move it forward with U.S. government funding. It also, unlike several other vaccines, it hasn't succeeded in monkey tests. It has succeeded in a few chimpanzees, but nobody even does AIDS vaccine testing in chimps any longer. Chimps and monkeys aren't the same, by the way, just so that you know the distinction.
So what do you think is the best hope for an AIDS vaccine?
Well, what I'd like to see happen, I think the great failure of the enterprise as a whole is that it hasn't fully exploited the monkey model. I'd like to see every good idea tested in a head-to-head comparison in monkeys and then move the ones that work the best forward. It's logical. It's simple. It's been called for by leading scientists for a decade at least. It hasn't happened yet. Right now, you can't even compare monkey data from one laboratory and another. They use different strains of SIV to test the vaccines. They have different protocols. They use different places to put the vaccine in, different places to put the virus in when they challenge the animals. It makes me dizzy when I look at that field. I think that it would behoove the world greatly to organize a master monkey trial and then to pick the ones that look the best, move those forward with little concern for why they worked. We can figure that out after the fact.
How does the future of the epidemic look with an AIDS vaccine and without an AIDS vaccine?
Well, drugs aren't going to stop the epidemic. That's not going to happen. Drugs are kind of a wash. I think we've seen that in the United States. When you look at sheer numbers of people who are infected, drugs are going to keep people alive longer. They're going to remain infectious. And you're not going to slow the transmission with drugs alone. That's not going to happen. Drugs also are never going to get, in my mind, to the poorest parts of the world. We only need to look at other diseases to see the problems there. Malaria and tuberculosis, those diseases are still raging. There are drugs that treat both. In fact, there are drugs that cure tuberculosis that don't get to people who need them. We know that vaccines are the most powerful medical tool. They're the most powerful medical intervention other than cleaning the water that we've ever come up with as humans. We know that the smallpox virus now only lives in laboratory freezers. That's it. We got rid of it with a vaccine. That's what vaccines can do. If we had a powerful AIDS vaccine, it could send the virus into laboratory freezers ultimately. It will take time. It will take decades. But it could happen. That's the promise. And another sobering thought is if you have a mediocre AIDS vaccine today, this is a calculation done by the National Institutes of Health in the United States, that works 60% of the time, 6-0, it will do more good 10 years down the road than a 90% effective vaccine introduced 5 years later. So that's a lesson from the past that we ignore too. Polio vaccines, the first Salk vaccine, it only worked in at most 70% of the people. Only 70% of the United States population went to get it. Between 1955 and 1961, polio in this country dropped more than 95%. Mediocre vaccine, mediocre coverage. Vaccines can create great good without having a great vaccine.
There's a UN special session on HIV/AIDS scheduled for June 25th to the 27th. What's that about?
It's largely about, in my mind, the success with drugs has led to this question of why don't we have drugs everywhere? I think that's been a trigger for this. It's thrown into relief the disparity that exists in different parts of the world. And that opens the door to a whole bunch of other issues like treating people fairly who have different sexual preferences, treating women fairly who do not have the power that men have in different cultures. And it goes on and on and on from there with all these non-governmental organizations coming forward with their own agendas. I think it's certainly a good thing to encourage leaders in many countries to take HIV and AIDS more seriously. I think it also is a good thing to create a global fund to purchase drugs for poor people around the world. So I'm not negative or cynical about it in and of itself. I think it can do a lot of good. I'm amused at the way that vaccines take such a back seat in this whole operation and how very few people think critically about that enterprise. And I've been following all the chat rooms that are in anticipation of this event, and there's hardly any mention of vaccines.
Would you think it's because people are giving up on it?
No, I think it's because people don't think much about vaccines. You know, people worry more about what's happening to them than they do about what might happen. I don't think people in the United States would wear seatbelts to a high degree if we didn't have laws that punished people who didn't. I mean, you see that in states that don't have seatbelt laws. People wouldn't vaccinate their children in this country if we didn't have laws that prohibited children from going to school who don't get vaccinated. So I think there's a simple problem with preventive medicine versus helping people who are sick. I think that's at the root of it. And then there's this other thing that's curious to me, and it has to do with vaccines sort of being an invisible medicine. You know, most of us get all of our vaccines by the time we're 5 years old. We've never seen polio, diphtheria, tetanus. We haven't seen these things. We're not afraid of them. And we don't think about the fact that we're protected from them. We just are. So I don't think that they're high in our consciousness. I don't think it's something we think about much.
You know, you mentioned that the Salk vaccine and the Sabin vaccines against polio were funded by the March of Dimes, which was the idea of FDR. Is there anything now that you would compare to the March of Dimes?
I think the International AIDS Vaccine Initiative is built on that model. The Eurovac network in Europe is built on that model. I don't think either organization is anywhere near ambitious enough or tapping into the public in the way that the March of Dimes did. That's another huge aspect to all of this. Most people in wealthy countries really don't know HIV and AIDS. They haven't feared it. The way people feared polio was whipped up by the March of Dimes, but it was real, too. Everyone knew someone who had been paralyzed by polio or who had died from polio. I think a lot of people in wealthy countries really don't know people who have suffered from AIDS, or if they do, it's sort of one or two steps removed. It's not a brother, a sister, a mother, a father. It's not the same. It's behaviorally transmitted. It's not casually transmitted. And that leads a lot of people to feel as though if you get it, you know, it's your fault. And I think that's completely wrong, but I think that's how a lot of people view it. And I think that feeds in, too, to the public's appetite for information about it, is they don't really fear it enough.
Well, John Cohn, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Terry.
John Cohn is the author of the new book, Shots in the Dark, The Wayward Search for an AIDS Vaccine. He writes about science and medicine for Science Magazine. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.